Presented by the Esports Research Network and the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping, Sweden.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Esports Research Report. I'm Steph Orm from Emmanuel College in Boston.
And I'm Brian McCauley here in Sweden at the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping, the city of DreamHack. Now our guest today is René Troer, if I'm pronouncing that right, who's been a sports commentator slash shoutcaster in esport terms for a host of different media and gaming companies, including Konami, Fox Sports, and a load more. So, René, welcome to the show. Please introduce yourself and tell us about what you do.
Thank you so much. That's funny. I didn't know you live in Jönköping, if I pronounce that right.
Yeah, right. I'm in the city of DreamHack.
Cool. I've been there twice way back when, 2010 and 2011. But sorry, let's first do the introduction. I'm an esports commentator. Through my work as an esports commentator, I've also become an actual football commentator. And I'm doing a lot of stage hosting as well in the past 3 to 4 years, I'd say. So my role is gradually shifting more and more to be show host as well. But I'm focusing on the commentary part. Started out with the shooter games back in the day with Counter-Strike, the old school version, CS 1.6, and then slowly but surely shifted more and more towards sports games as well, because esports organizers started noticing that I was crazy about football, and at some point someone wanted me to try out FIFA as well, and then Pro Evolution Soccer, etc., and the ball started rolling. And now, since the past 1.5 year, I've been adding NBA 2K to my repertoire. So right now I'm crazy into basketball as well, following the NBA playoffs, etc. So I don't just stick to the game that I've played at tournaments, which was Counter-Strike for about 4 years. Managed to win a few prizes here and there. I was top 3-4 times and then won a tournament once. That basically built my esports career, Counter-Strike. But slowly but surely, I'm shifting more and more towards the sports games in recent years.
So just to clarify here, and we talked about this before we started recording, is that you said you're a commentator and in esports the term is shoutcaster. So where does the term shoutcaster come from, and what, how do you make that distinction?
Yeah, well, near the end of the 90s, I guess it was that the first people started actually shoutcasting esports games, or back then still competitive gaming or professional gaming matches. And there was a program, I forgot the name of the program that was used for it. Maybe you'll know it. But the term used there was to start shoutcast. And then you would start recording your voice together with the game sounds. And that's where
I think
the term shoutcaster comes from.
I think it was called Shoutcast.
The program was actually called Shoutcast as well. Okay. All right, well.
Because I looked it up, and there's another definition that said people had to shout over all the shooting and stuff. So, you know, but it's actually from the program. But I like the other version too as well.
Yeah.
So our first question always is your definition of esports. I mean, to you, what is esports? How would you describe it to your grandma or, you know, a professor who doesn't know anything about it?
Yeah, I'd say it's when people play a game competitively with the intention of winning prizes. So they take part in organized either leagues or tournaments or both. So basically, when people are trying to win prizes or getting a salary from gaming, that's where it becomes esports. And even if you're not getting a salary and not winning the prizes, if you're practicing every night together with the team and you're taking part in official leagues, ladders, or tournaments, I'd say that's esports. Casual gaming is not esports.
So if I'm playing CSGO on a matchmaking platform, am I playing esports in your terms, what you're saying?
Not necessarily. I'd say esports is where you round up a bunch of guys and you always play with the same guys in a structured format, trying to become better and better at what you do and trying to actually reach a level where you can win prizes. I think that's esports.
Hold on. I'm a professor and I'm doing research by playing CSGO. Does that make me a professional gamer?
Good question.
Am I a professional gamer, René?
No.
I wouldn't use the term to describe you, but of course, there are people who write articles about games or write reviews on new games. Basically, their profession is also playing games. So you could say they're a professional gamer as well, but I wouldn't use the term e-sporter for them. E-sports is when you actually take part in professionally organized competitions trying to win prize money. That's basically my definition. I'm not saying it's the right one, but yeah, there it is.
No, that's interesting. So I have to ask, I hear that you carried the Olympic torch back in 2012. I think that was London. London? Yeah. What's the story behind that? How did that happen? Because that's so cool.
It's insane. So basically as a Counter-Strike player, I wasn't nearly the best in the country, but I was basically in at some point in the top five teams, so to speak. And I was quite, popular because I was always the one talking a lot. And when there was an interview, because we were on the podium, it was always me shoved forward because I'd usually be able to speak English pretty well. And I wouldn't shut down when cameras and spotlights hit my face. So I was quite a popular guy in the scene. And there was always a forum for Dutch teams to discuss stuff, and people were always talking about the popular guys. So basically everyone already knew that I was doing, that I used to play football or soccer, that I broke my ankle, so that kind of killed my career. And it wasn't like I was good at football. Let's be honest, I was never going to go pro. I was decent. But that killed my career. But that made me graduate into esports. That made me sit at home a lot with my leg in a casket, playing Counter-Strike a lot. So, and they knew that I did volunteering work. They knew that I was a blood donor, etc. So at some point, my popularity as a caster even became higher than as a player. So there was this one person that had nominated me to be a torchbearer. So I didn't realize there was a nomination process going, because I didn't really follow the Olympics, to be honest. I followed football, definitely, but not really the Olympics. But Samsung, which was one of the main sponsors for the 2012 Olympics, they started a nomination process in Holland to be able to gather 10 Dutch torchbearers. And at some point, I got a call from someone from Samsung saying, hey, like 8 months from now, we've got the preliminary celebrations for the Olympics, and we are having the torch being run from Athens to London. And in order to get it there, we have 8,000 torchbearers, 10 from each country and a lot from England. And we need 10 Dutchies, and you are nominated. Would you be able to be in Sunderland this and that weekend? It was 15th and 16th of June, 2012. And I was like, I thought they were joking. I thought someone was pulling a prank on me, obviously. But
yeah, because nobody wanted to go to Sunderland, by the way.
I actually really enjoyed my time there, but obviously with the streets lined with people cheering you on. But I figured I was never going to get chosen because there were over 1,000 nominees. And I was like, they'll go with the really special people, with the war veterans. And I was like, they're never going to choose me. But sure, yeah, I'll keep that weekend free. and then a couple of months later, they started asking, can you provide this and that document? And we're going to have to check out your family. There need to be no criminals, and your the family of your girlfriend as well. So it was getting pretty serious. And I was like, okay. And at some point, I was actually one of the 10 people chosen to carry the torch. And it was like half a mile we got to run. And my run was in Sunderland, started near the Aquatic Center, and towards London.
What a crazy phone call.
Yes. exactly.
Hey, do you want to carry the Olympic torch?
Yeah.
What a cool story.
Yeah, very. Indeed. The unfortunate thing was, I was in Jönköping in 2010 and 2011 for DreamHack Summer. And DreamHack Summer 2012, they asked me as well. But it was the exact same weekend, so I missed out on that. Shame.
Well, hopefully DreamHack will come back now. We're doing DreamHack Beyond, which is an interactive game thing I'm looking into, which means there's going to be more hybrid stuff. So kind of next question we're going to have put down is how you ended up in esports, which you've kind of answered. So I guess I'm just going to ask you, you're 37 now, and you played CSGO at a very high level. So did you play against like Christian Lidstrom and Heaton and Alan Pedersen? Who was all those guys?
The guys slightly after that in SK Gaming, I did play them. Spawn, Wally, Robin, Tentpole, and who was the fifth? Spawn, Wally, Tentpole, Robin. I think Zed might have been it. So, yeah.
Because I'm in Sweden here. Absolutely legends. From me and Chepping. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. It was a different world then. You know, now it's higher level, of course. It's professional, really professional. I mean, I have friends who are like, yeah, I competed at Worlds. And I was like, did you make any money? And they're like, no. Or, no, yes, Johnny. I'll ask him that, Johnny. Thanks, Johnny. Johnny, little kittens in here.
Cheers for the feedback.
Johnny, get to it. All right, chill, dude. Instead, you ask the next question, will I handle this kitten?
Yeah. Well, I'm actually curious if you have a favorite game or a favorite genre to commentate on or shoutcast, whatever term you prefer.
Yeah, right now I really like the football games, especially Pro Evolution Soccer, because I think that probably has to do with the kind of events I got to do for Pro Evolution Soccer. So I've been at World Esports Games, which is dubbed the Olympic Sports of Gaming. I've been at International Esports Federation's tournament in Paris. I've been at PES League events in Porto, Liverpool, London, Kiev. I've had a lot of insanely cool Pro Evolution Soccer events. So that's probably the reason that I favor that game mostly. And also because I've been doing the Dutch PES League, which was basically four big qualifying tournaments each year and then a grand final. So I've been hanging with the PES guys for so long and so many times and had so much good times with them and also with the international top dogs. So I guess I have the best feelings about Pro Evolution Soccer as a commentator. But obviously I also love Counter-Strike because I used to play it. I love FIFA as well. And I'm starting to really, really like NBA 2K. I've done Formula One esports, basically the Dutch league, which was a talk show about Formula One racing and the tournament, and they kind of wove it into each other with switching in between the two commentators and switching between the talk show with me as a desk host and then two guests from the world of racing or from the world of Formula One, which was kind of cool. We did that for two seasons, but I'll be honest, as a commentator, I did a few Formula One events, but I haven't always been into racing. I picked it up since I was doing that, obviously. I had to really get stuck in and grind up all my information and everything, knowledge, etc. Because it wasn't up to scratch when I started. But I haven't enjoyed that as much as I do basketball, which I've only been doing for 2 years as well. But I really like that sport. And I don't know whether it's down to the fact that it's got something to do with
Dutch people
with
are really tall and like to play
maybe
basketball.
Yeah, I'm 192, so I wouldn't be one of the big dogs, but I could be in there. But
he's short in Holland, like
yeah, but I like fast-paced action sports with a lot of moments to celebrate. So in football you have a bunch of goals, but in basketball you have constant scoring and etc.
Well, so. Americans would disagree that there's a lot of goals in soccer, as they call it. It's football yeah. stuff. Just don't get off track here. And so just bring it back down to Pro Evolution Football, just because that was my game on the PlayStation 2 with my friends. And, you know, there was the time that my cousin Rory beat David Keane with Greece against Brazil. And I'm just bringing that up so I can send it to my friend David Keane and point out that I brought it up again in a podcast, even though he claims not to remember it. But I had two Dutch students, so shout out to Dan and Joris, and they were doing their master's in international marketing here, and I was their thesis supervisor, and they did FIFA as their topic, and they looked at the kind of the hatred from the reviews of FIFA and all that thing. Right. So I guess the question is there a big, we know football, Cruyff and Rickard, you know, Bergkamp, of course, the best ever. But is there a huge following in Holland around Pro Evolution Football and FIFA for a start? Is that a big thing in Holland beyond other countries?
Yeah, it's mostly FIFA. FIFA is bigger than PES, like it is in most countries, to be honest. But yeah, we're all crazy about football, so we love playing these sort of games. And people have been switching back and forth between Pro Evolution Soccer and FIFA. And in recent years, FIFA has really set themselves as the top dog. Obviously, Konami is still trying with PES to grab some of their to gain momentum and gain ground by getting some official licenses for especially Italian clubs like Juventus, AS Roma, Atalanta Bergamo. All of them will be named differently in FIFA 22.
Oh, well, sure. In Football Manager, Juventus are known as Zebra, which totally ruins it when I'm trying to, you know, manage Arsenal's world domination. Yeah, so they have that problem there. But I mean,
how far are you towards world domination?
I do it every year, just therapy. I manage Arsenal, win the European Cup a whole lot of times, and fix everything the current managers. It's brilliant. Yeah. I'm just mobile though, mobile.
Yeah. You're an Arsenal fan?
Yep. We bonded over that.
I've stood on holy ground for you.
Definitely. What's that?
One of the best leagues events was at the Emirates Stadium. I've met Robert Pires there. I can send you a picture of him and me doing. We were actually both doing the punditry at some point for some of the games, which was very cool. We talked about Arsene Wenger and Dennis Bergkamp. But I've also stood in Highbury when it wasn't really Highbury anymore. It wasn't really the stadium of Arsenal anymore, but it's still there, and it's. They've renovated it into apartments, so people are actually living there in where the stands used to be, but the field is still there. It's basically a park, and
That's so cool.
It's insane. And the front desk is still there, and the entry gates are still there. So it's still basically Highbury. And I had a Dutch friend who worked at a huge firm in England, and he actually lived there for about a year. So I visited him one weekend. And he showed me around the stadium, basically, and it was epic for guys like you and me. That's like
we better move on, Renee. I'd just like to say I've been to Highbury and I had my 40th birthday a few months ago, and I was supposed to go see an Arsenal game with my fiance, but COVID. So I know, terrible. So let's move on because Steph's getting.
Hope she gets well soon.
No. Anyway. Okay, now I know where you're coming here. When we look at you do football, and I was looking at some of the FIFA shoutcasting, right? And I couldn't really tell the difference between traditional football and shoutcasting football. I was like going, you know, and especially with the graphics now, if you weren't paying attention, you would nearly not know if you didn't see a guy with a controller, you know, pulling faces. So what are the differences between shoutcasting and traditional commentary for you, and maybe across different genres or things, or, you know?
Yeah, for me, doing esports commentary, I slowly grew into it. And then at some point I got asked to do an actual football match, and then you're suddenly in a stadium and you're sitting at a certain point and the ball is all the way at the other end and you have to commentate and you're seeing these guys, and sometimes two guys look exactly like each other, and the one has number 19 on his shirt and the other one has number 29. So they got the same height, same hairdo, and standing with their back towards you. So it's hard to make out sometimes what exactly is happening at the other end of the pitch. And in esports, obviously, you have your three screens in front of you and you can see everything. You can see instant replays. So basically, that's a big difference that made it hard for me to... during my first football match, it made it hard for me to feel like I was doing a good job. And then in the end, the guy doing commentary with me, he'd been there for 10 years. He said I did a great job. And they asked me back a couple of times. So that's always good to hear. But it did feel like it was tough. But as you gain experience, that will also become easier, obviously.
That's great. I hadn't even thought about that. Just the perspective difference.
Steph, your microphone is glitching out there.
Oh my gosh, really?
Oh, that's better.
There you go.
I don't know why that keeps happening. Anyway, no, I was just saying that's really interesting because I hadn't thought about the difference in perspective. And with esports, like being able to see everything from top down, or like you said, replay or zoom in on particular things, whereas you don't have that agency over a pitch, exactly, right? Yeah. Or over a court. So that's really cool.
Yeah, I've had esports events also where technique wasn't up to scratch. So obviously it's not always perfect. And sometimes even when I was sat directly behind the players instead of in a different commentator booth, and the players were like, they always go like this right into their screen, the active player mode with the controller like, Urgh. And so I was like, dude, I can't see. So it's not always perfect, but obviously nowadays in esports, it's all very professional. So you'll be able to see everything that's going on. And you're also getting cues from the big professional productions. So yeah, it's easier to follow all the action as it happens. And if you miss out on something, either your co-caster will pick it up or someone in the directing seat will send you a text. So. Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about like esports observers, right? Which are kind of a unique role. So the people who actually control the camera work. What's the relationship working with them like? Do you feel like you kind of follow their lead? So like if they're focusing on something, does that kind of dictate your commentary? Or do you commentate and they kind of follow what you're doing? Or are you controlling the camera? Or what's going on there?
Well, back in the day when I really actively casted Counter-Strike on a regular basis, I was doing observing while we were casting as well. And later when I transitioned mostly to sport games, that's when the big events in Counter-Strike started utilizing observers and in other shooter games as well, obviously. But for sports games, there's no need for an observer because you have a scope of the entire field, everything that's happening, and the ball is the center of view at all times. So there's no real need for an observer. Same goes for NBA 2K. So I haven't been working with observers that much, but they obviously make the work of a commentator so much more easy, especially when it's the good observers who know exactly who to follow, because sometimes you're so invested in shoutcasting and commentating and the stuff you want to say and you want to make it sound epic. You don't want to be repetitive, so you want to use different superlatives at all times. So you're not always thinking clearly about who to follow. Basically, for instance, if there's four players left on the terrorist team and there's one guy left on the CT team, obviously you're going to follow the CT because he's guarding the bomb and they're all going to go his way. And he might have a spray down where he kills four people. So you're gonna want to have that as the main focus, and it's great to have an observer there because he's always going to be able to pick up on stuff like that because he's really focused on that. That's the only thing he needs to worry about, and great observers really make a production greater and they make the life of a commentator easier as well. So I love the addition of observers.
What's the basketball commentating like? And can you please say "Boom goes the dynamite" one time, like that old meme? You know, because that was just brilliant.
Boom goes the dynamite. I've actually used the boom shakalaka at some point.
You know, the guy thrown in at the deep end for a production, and he didn't know how to commentate on sports. It's an old internet video, and he just goes, and the guy shoots, and boom goes the dynamite.
I haven't seen that. I thought you were referring to the old sayings that they used to use in NBA Jam. Like,
I'm the oldest. Oh, I remember that.
He's on fire.
I remember that.
Good stuff. Oh, man.
And what do you think of the actual commentary for playing the games themselves, like FIFA now? Because I remember the rugby game, they used to say, he's going to send him to the hospital ward 7 with that tackle. I hope not, right, Bill. That's the maternity ward. And he used to come up like twice a game. I mean, what's it like now in FIFA? Because I don't play them anymore because of CSGO and, you know, what's the commentary like? Has that improved a lot? Has it become more intuitive or is it still annoyingly repetitive when you're playing by yourself?
It has improved a lot, but it's still at some times repetitive. So you'll always be able to see that as not an actual commentator there reacting live to what's happening, but obviously the preset phrases, etc. But they've made so much more phrases and so much more terms, and they're trying to make it better, but it will never be perfect because obviously when you have someone live reacting to what is happening, it's always going to be 10 times as good. But they have improved immensely, I feel, in the past years or in the past decades even.
I'm just feeling really bad now because I have Arsenal shirts for my two cats and I should have put them on and shown you. But I mean,
nice.
So I'm just like going, oh, it's the only time they'll ever get to be admired as much. I mean, do you have a favorite game or genre to shout? Is there one that you really love, or have you kind of got them all down now, or is it always going to be Pro Evo with your roots in that game?
I'd say I love shooter games and I love football games most, but I also like basketball games more and more. So I can't say that it would be all sports games. For instance, tennis, I know nothing about, and I don't really have an interest in that sport. I know Federer is great. I know Rafael Nadal is great, but that's basically it for me. So if someone were to ask me, would you like to be commentator for a tennis gaming tournament, I'd probably say no, because first of all, I wouldn't be doing myself any favors, because I would be bad, very bad. And I think the reason I said yes to NBA 2K is because I knew that if I started to get invested and I had enough time, it was like 2 months away, the event. So I knew I'd be able to get invested in NBA 2K because I like basketball as a sport. So I've really been grinding down on that and watching as much as I can. And I'm actually enjoying it, but I know that I won't be enjoying tennis or cycling or other sports much. There's
baseball and cricket have to be the hardest because nothing happens and they go on for hours.
Yeah. And I,
oh my God, instance, if you can follow baseball if you're blind, it's that systematic.
I do like baseball, but that's because I've played it myself in high school a couple of times, and then I always liked it. And I do like some baseball movies, like 42 with about Jackie Robinson with Chadwick
Boseman. Field of Dreams, that's the best one. That's just the answer. And League of Their Own, of course. Yeah.
But I think that it would be hard to commentate for me.
Well, actually, I was thinking about and I don't know how many of the games you commentate for you don't play. Like, are there any that, or how important do you think it is to play the games that you commentate for? Is that necessary, or do you feel like you can kind of observe and watch and understand the game enough to talk about it?
That's a good question. I feel comfortable doing Counter-Strike because I used to play it. Mm-hmm. I feel comfortable doing FIFA and PES because I'm crazy about football. I have like 30 years of football knowledge stored in my brain, so I'm always okay there, especially as I've in the years since I'm doing football games, I have been following the scene and everything that goes on. As soon as the team of the season or the team of the year comes out, I make sure I know who's in there, make sure what their ratings are, and when the new game comes out, what are the ratings of the players. At least top 10 or top 20 needs to be in here for me. So that makes it okay for me to be able to do football games while I'm not actually playing them actively anymore. And I've actually never played them on a tournament level. So I played FIFA and PES a lot with my friends, but not at the level where I would be able to make semifinals or a grand final of a tournament. So I think
I could do FIFA or PES actually, but I couldn't do CSGO despite 1500 hours in the game. I'd be going, he shot someone. There's a flashbang, something's happened. Whereas FIFA is looking at it and going, for pass, that's offside, true ball, slide pass rule, whatever that is,
Exactly,
denies him at the end. It's ingrained in me, 30 years, 35 years of watching football.
But exactly,
The CSGO is beyond me because when I'm playing CSGO, I'm going, I got to do this. Oh.
You need to be tactically versed. And that's the reason, for instance, if someone asked me to do League of Legends as a stage host, sure, I can ask the open questions. I know the basics, but if they ask me to do it as a commentator, League of Legends, nope, not touching it. Never.
I want to do it.
Played it, and in order to become good at it, I would have to, by just watching streams, I'd have to watch like 4,000 League of Legends streams probably before I'd be a good commentator.
At least 1,000 hours, at least.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't have the time for it. So yeah,
I play that game. I can't I can't always tell you what's happening.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're attacking the dragon. The little blue guy's coming up behind them. Oh, it's a
match. Exactly. Yeah, the viewers wouldn't be too stoked.
They know every hero, and they know the best builds for them are, and like
all the champions.
All those champions and the strategies and what beasts are spawning on the field. I mean, there's so much going on, and it's not just like reacting to things either, right? A lot of times it's kind of predictive on their part. Yeah. So I mean, there's, you know, in talking to you and having observed shoutcasters or commentators over the years, I have so much respect for what you do, because I frankly couldn't do it.
Thank you. Well, it's all down to experience, I guess, because if you knuckle down and start grinding your hours, and even if you're obviously not going to get hired instantly by the big firms, but even if you just sit down and start casting your own games at home and then watching back your own footage, then you'll be able to quickly pinpoint the things that are annoying to you and that doesn't sound so cool as when a professional does it. So you'll be able to pick up on that and instantly improve.
How do you do that? I've never even watched or listened to this podcast. I have to edit these. And yeah. I just go, oh, this is horrific. Tell me where I said the bad thing, Steph. Do you remember when? So I can edit everything I said. That was really offensive.
Yeah.
How is it watching yourself? Can you watch yourself? Do you sit there? Do you bring girls on dates and go, oh, look at the TV? Look at me.
No, definitely not. I have to be honest. And at first, I thought it was a bit weird watching and listening to myself, but I really felt that I needed to do it in order to improve. So the first years of my career, I watched as much as I could and tried to compare to the top level professionals in the field from actual sports, but also esports. And I was thinking like, what am I doing that doesn't sound so great? Right, that's something I need to eliminate. And why am I sounding so repetitive? I need to have a bigger vocabulary. Stuff like that. And you'll get better and better. And for the past 4 to 5 years, I haven't been able to watch or listen back to anything because I've been so swamped. I've been constantly working. So basically you also at the same time feel that there's no need for it anymore, because obviously everyone is asking you to do events, even not in my own language, but in English. So basically I'm confident enough that I have reached a certain level as a commentator where it's good enough, mm-hmm. but at the same time, you'll always be able to become better at it. So I'll always try and improve.
So what's the experience like? Because you told me you were doing Dutch commentary for Belgian TV. Was that what you said to me?
Yeah, how exactly. Yeah. Belgium is a small country right below the Netherlands.
Oh, I know that. She doesn't know that. She's American.
But what a lot of people don't know is that they actually speak three languages in that country.
Flemish.
Flemish, French. Exactly, French, and a really small part speaks a variation on German, which is Luxembourgish. Luxembourg, also a small country right besides Belgium, in between, squished in between Germany and Belgium.
There you go, Steph, more geography for you.
Exactly.
Europe isn't a country, Steph.
That's as far as my geography goes, and you're tripping. And so, no, but in Belgium, they have usually have either English commentary at events, or they have both French and Dutch casting, so that everybody in the country is able to fully understand what's going on, choose their own language. And in recent years, they've started their own professional FIFA league in cooperation with the top level football clubs, with the actual sports clubs. All of them needed to field a FIFA player. And exactly like all other countries are doing right now for all different kinds of sports as well. So like NBA, we have the actual official league in America. And in Sweden, there will probably be figure skating. No, I'm kidding.
No, Icelandic mini horses became a sports club. I did the bloody science for the application, and the Icelandic mini horses got in somehow.
Wow.
Paddleball. I mean, what's happening in Holland?
But you have the E-Allsvenskan, obviously. You have the E-Allsvenskan, right? Have you been following it?
What's that?
That's the
Prater Intersvenska.
It's a digital Swedish football league for Sweden. So all the professional football clubs field a player. But to get back to your question,
we do research papers, produce podcasts, run research networks, teach, develop other stuff. If I'm not watching games, I'm going to play games. That's you want to games makes me, no, playing games gets me out of thinking about research papers and work. Oh, right. You know, that's the thing. I've got so much on that I want to play CSGO because pandemics and crap. That focuses me. For watching games, I find very hard because I suddenly the researcher brain steps on and I start going,
Right. And you're analyzing and exactly.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's it. You need that focus. So is it a sport in Holland now yet or? Is it, or do you have Icelandic mini horses as a sport as well?
No, basically we have swimming, which usually is something that Dutch people somehow are really good at. Not me,
because they're tall. Because they're tall,
maybe. Basketball. Yeah, I can swim. I can save my life if I need to. But it's not like I can race across the swimming pool like some of those guys. But skating. Ice skating is something Dutch people are generally very good at. And right now, Max Verstappen is very good in Formula One. But football is definitely number one sport in Holland. But the mini horses, I haven't spotted.
I'm not getting into it, you know. But is it classified as a sport in Holland is what I'm saying? Is it legally a sport? I mean, this e-sports. Definition of each. Yes.
No, not yet. Not yet.
But not yet. That's it, isn't it?
I think, yeah, exactly. Because they've been talking about it in Germany and in a lot of countries, it's already becoming more and more accepted as a mainstream thing at the very least, and sometimes even as an official sport. And in Germany, they've been talking about it in politics. Talking about should we do something with the government about esports and about the development, about getting involved with the youth, and that's something interesting as well. We have a foundation here in Holland which I'm a part of, where we try and have lectures for both parents of gaming children and gaming children themselves, where we try and inform them about how to be responsible about your gaming, because obviously it's not the way to become world champion when you're just grinding your hours on end without breaks in between. Because a lot of kids think that in order to become world champion, they have to play 8 hours every day. What they don't realize is that you'll be able to make more progress by breaking it up in small parts of gaming where you're actually still focused and still doing the analysis of your own gameplay. And at some point you're on autopilot mode after an hour or more. So it's especially important to stay hydrated, stay focused, stay well fed, stay well rested, and have your breaks in between, especially to preserve your eyes, obviously, because a lot of screen time.
We actually have all those researchers. We've Gamer Doc Lindsay, who's a she's an actual doctor, but she specializes in esports. You've got Craig McNulty in Australia, who's on the board of ERN, who specializes in breathing. You've got Tim Smith, he's in Ireland, looks at sleeping patterns in esports performance. You've got Adam Toth and Mark Campbell at the Liro Lab in Ireland, and they have a paper on flicking, how it improves it. And I have to say, I've spent a week following the paper's advice, and I had my best game of CSGO ever last night after spending an hour a day spray training and doing flicking. Yeah, it was funny. I was very tired as well. And so there's a lot of science, but it's absolutely right. And that's part of what we do at Esports Research Network is to try to bring these people with the industry to actually allow stuff to happen. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. And in Sweden, you've got these great organizations. There's a guy, Prima Esports, that teaches what Martin runs, and he's got toxic bullying, and the female legends promote girls in esports. You've got Esport United that promote the grassroots. And here in Jönköping, we've actually got a funded club called Phoenix Blue, which is designed to run by Max and founded by Victor, that's designed to promote youth engagement with sports in the city, and the local government here actually works with them. So it's good to hear that stuff is happening in Holland as well. It's just if we had the classification of sport, it'd be a lot easier to push things through.
Exactly. Yeah. But I do feel like there's so much happening in esports right now. Complete esports cities are being built. Esports stadiums are being resurrected around the world. And just recently, one of our 12 provinces in Holland has announced that they're going to be investing €500,000 euros, which is basically like 0.8 million. No, that's not right. $0.65 million, I guess, in esports and it's making sure
But
they're trying to make sure that our competitive talents will have a proper, like you said, selecting the grassroots, making sure that there's a proper structure for them in order to be able to grow their talents, because that's a big thing right now. If you're into esports and you want to get good at it, there's not really a good way to be able to get a local coach. And for instance, if you're all about FIFA and you're a Dutch kid, there's probably two or three great coaches out there who will be able to give you proper guidance. And with the exception of the guys who are at the professional clubs, obviously, playing in the digital league.
Wait, so you don't have high school programs? Because my friend Hannes is a coach.
They're starting up right
we
now.
We have, like, my friend's a teacher, and he's the official esports coach in the next small town over, and he lives here. So Holland is starting to develop too, that, which is really positive. So, Renee, we're nearly out of time now. So I guess, Steph, do you want to ask a last question before we go?
Yeah, no, I was just curious, you know, having the perspective on traditional sports as well as esports, where do you kind of see the future of esports headed, right? You were just talking about all these like developments and the crazy growth we're seeing. So what's sort of your projection for the next 5, 10, 15 years?
I imagine that we're going to see a lot of growth in raising the amateur level or the semi-professional level with proper coaching, proper clubs, because there's so little right now, especially in Holland. But like we just talked about, it's starting to come. And right now in North Holland, we have a huge esports stadium that has been built. And they've just started a talent management program as well. Some of the universities in Holland are starting an esports program as well. So I think those kind of initiatives will pop up more and more around the globe as well. So we'll see it become more and more professional, hopefully, especially when it comes to coaching, but also maybe even player management. How will a player be able to get a professional club or an esports organization? There will need to be certain people looking out for their interests. Obviously, as esports gets more and more professional and gets bigger and bigger prize purses and salaries, which will happen for sure, there will also become a role like that. So player management will be something that we'll see more and more, which right now is only out there for the actual top level professionals. But at some point you'll see player managers, I guess, for also lower level caliber players who want to be able to make a run to the top.
Okay, so the last sort of question we have is because we do a lot of researchers here, right? And we ask them, what sort of research do you want to see done? So just to ask the same question to you, like, so, you know, you've got your pick of, you know, scientists, programmers, health specialists, regional marketing like me, or gender and accessibility scholars like Steph, or innovation scholars. I mean, if you could pick a top professor way beyond us who's brilliant to investigate one thing in Holland that you think would help esports in Holland, what would you like to see have a genius professor go investigate with loads of European funding behind him?
Oh, wow.
What would be the thing you'd say? Off you go.
I'd say, I'd say talent management, finding out a way to be able to be sure that we get the best gamers in the country and get them where they need to be in the shortest amount of time. Yeah, because there's huge potential in Holland. There are top level players for all of the different types of games out there. But it's hard to see them become world champion when they have to focus on their study or their actual job, because esports is still just a hobby for them.
Yeah. Okay, great, Rene. Thank you very much. Also, I'd like to thank my Dutch students, Dan and Joris, for giving me a bottle of whiskey as a thank you for supervising their thesis, which apparently is a Dutch tradition. Also, not an Irish tradition is an Irish man who doesn't really drink whiskey. So I will know. So Renee, thank you very much. Your links and everything will be below the video or the podcast if you're listening to this on Spotify or Apple or something. So Steph, this was about football, but Renee, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Renee. Have-